You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Last week, I spoke with the Minister of Social Development, Carmel Cipollone, to talk through some criticisms of our welfare system and changes that many groups have been advocating for a long time. Now, as we move from level 4 lockdown and begin to consider a recovery period for those facing hardships from the impacts of COVID-19, the Child Poverty Action Group believes now is the time, and the government has an opportunity in this upcoming budget to implement cost-effective measures that will forge a fairer society. I spoke with Georgie Crawer, who is the Executive Officer at CPEG. She talked with me through the Ministry of Social Development's latest response from Tuesday and how children have been almost invisible in New Zealand's stance apart from education. We start with the challenges facing the government post-lockdown period as we move through Alert Level 3.
So I think, you know, from a poverty or wellbeing perspective, the government needs to be really, really carefully thinking about how they're going to adequately support people who all of a sudden will be coming into contact with the welfare system. I think one of the really interesting things about this, like, it's obviously heartbreaking, but what this kind of crisis shows is that it can be something completely out of your control. One life shot happens and you lose your job and you lose your, you know, financial security and your financial independence. And then you're reliant on this kind of system that doesn't really work for you. You know, people in power and successive governments have actually neglected our welfare system to the point where it doesn't work for people. And there's lots of kind of poverty traps in it. I just think that the government, I mean, ideally they would have already overhauled the welfare system, which they've promised to do. And they got some really good advice about how they should do that from the Welfare Expert Advisory Group 18 months ago. So if there was ever a time, it's now to actually make those changes.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I had a chance to speak with Carmel Cipollone just last week. I talked with her through these criticisms and also just around their latest implementations, just around releasing their initiatives. In Level 3, there was an announcement, I believe, on Tuesday, which was just around what the Ministry for Social Development will be doing, such as implementing a Keep New Zealand Working online recruitment tool, 35 new employment centres around the country. How has the Child Poverty Action Group found the Ministry's response?
To be honest, I think it's just a bit underwhelming. The Minister said in her press release around it that a lot of that work was already planned before the COVID-19 crisis happened and that was part of their welfare overhaul work. But like creating a kind of online job seeker tool isn't actually overhauling the welfare system. And I think for people who, like the people who it's aiming to help, are people who have already been in long-term employment and probably are, you know, they have experience of that. They're probably already highly motivated and able to work. But before this crisis happened, more than half the people who receive a benefit, they're either, they have a long-term health condition or they have a disability, or maybe they're caring for someone who has a health condition or disability. And so actually forcing those people into inappropriate work, which takes them away from their families, and maybe it's probably low paid and it's probably insecure and it probably doesn't have great hours for them or whatever. Like, that's not a very good solution. It's just kind of going to create more toxic stress. And then also on top of that, the way that the welfare system is set up, people who are on a job seeker benefit can't earn, they can, I think it's like $80 or $90. It's changed. It depends on what kind of benefit you're on. You can only earn up to that amount before your benefit is clawed back really aggressively. So that's a kind of trap for people to get into it. The feedback cycle is quite negative. So it would be great to be seeing some leadership from Minister Cipollone about how they're actually going to fix the things that are stopping people from working in the first place, rather than just duplicating another online tool. I mean, you know, it's fine, but it's not going to solve the issue.
Absolutely right. I mean, talking with Minister Cipollone, she mentioned as well the Welfare Advisory Group that put in their recommendations. It was around 42 recommendations, The Minister chose to take around up to 3 of those recommendations, which was... feels like there should be more.
And it's not the main ones, right? Like, the big problem is, like, the main recommendation on the Welfare Expert Advisory Group was, at that cultural level, was to put dignity and respect back at the heart of the welfare system. And a really big way to do that is also to ensure that people have a livable income so that they're not toxically stressed, so that their children have all of the opportunities that they need to. So, yeah, I mean, the response to the Welfare Expert Advisory Group recommendations has been really, really bad, in our opinion.
It has. And I mean, even with the individualising the system around relationships, it was, you know, very
critical time during this lockdown with people facing unemployment and so forth, that it feels like it was a recommendation that could have been implemented. And we have spoken about some of this, but just, I was just wondering about policies around in-work tax credit.
Yeah, so at the, this is something that Child Poverty Action Group have been really active with for a very long time. So essentially what happens is if you're in paid employment, you could access this thing called the in-work tax credit, which is $72.50 a week, but you had to meet certain kind of hours of work. And so for a single parent, it was 20 hours, and for a couple, it was 30 hours combined. So there was this issue there around, well, it's actually harder for a single parent to find childcare to be able to work 20 hours, but it's much easier for a couple to do 30 hours between them. And you are only eligible for that if you're not on a main benefit. We've argued for a long time that it discriminates against children of beneficiaries. Apparently the aim of the in-work tax credit is to alleviate child poverty, but they use it as a work incentive, even though it's been found that it actually doesn't work as a work incentive at all, and in fact can have the opposite effect. What they announced at the beginning of the lockdown was that they were going to take away that the work hours, that criteria, so that people who had lost work because of this COVID-19 crisis, they would still be able to access their in-work tax credit. So it's like taking our recommendation one step, but the really big problem is, well, that's fine for people who have maybe dropped their work down a little bit, but what about all of those people who were already out of work or who now find themselves completely out of work and actually do have to go on a benefit? It's such a double whammy when you lose your salary and then you also lose that $70 a week, which is actually a lot of money for people who are living paycheck to paycheck or, you know, don't have food in the pantry.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a policy that just seems so poorly designed. And, you know, as you said, it took it one step, but it kind of left behind everyone else who, just because of the circumstance, might have already been affected or were even worsely affected.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, inherently, I think the main point to make about it is that it discriminates against children whose parents need income support, and that's not okay. You know, CPAC had a big court case around this before my time, but the higher courts in New Zealand agreed that the government could have a work incentive, but did agree that it was discriminatory.
Now, just another question. This is more around education. Under Alert Level 3, school doors are once again opening. For the Child Poverty Action Group, what is your stance on children, some who have been experiencing or just started experiencing poverty under new circumstances? What is your stance on them returning to education?
Yeah, good question. Obviously, as a group, we've been reflecting a lot on how children have been kind of almost invisible in the response, except in terms of education. So our goal is as a country without any child poverty, where, you know, all children can flourish and they aren't kind of locked into poverty. In order to kind of do that, the main thing is making sure that their families are adequately resourced so that they can provide them with the opportunities to follow their talents and their interests, and they can, you know, make their lives what they want them to look like. And obviously education is a really big part of that, and having access to quality education. So it's great that kids are going back to school. I love that idea, because it's such a big part of what will provide children with the opportunities to thrive. And it also means that teachers and carers in schools often spot things that are going wrong with kids, or things that might be that they don't have food, or, you know, there's maybe some suggestion of abuse. Also, that sometimes acts as a bit of a safety valve, I guess. So, yeah, it's great that kids are going back to school. But in terms of them experiencing poverty, I guess what's clear, and what became clearer in the period that we've just been through, is that learning from home was a lot easier for some families than it was for others. And a big part of that was around the access to digital devices and the internet. Some families just actually don't have that. Or maybe they have access to, like, one phone or something, you know, mum's phone will have the internet on it, and they're trying to share it with, you know, three kids. So, like I was saying, the Ministry of Education in the schools, they did quite a lot of work around it, but we haven't really analysed it in depth yet. We're just kind of been in the eye of the storm, I guess. So I don't want to comment too much on how successful that's been, but it's great that kids are going to be back at school. I think parents will be breathing a sigh of relief as well.
Yeah, no, I absolutely understand. I mean, I was going to ask about, you know, what might have been the response, or what has kind of been the effects of the Ministry of Education you know, having implemented these learning devices and so forth. Mm. But as you said, you can comment later when you've run some numbers and you've heard back. This is just moving into another question now. I believe the Child Poverty Action Group, you have an event on the 15th of May, this next month. Can you tell me a little bit around this?
Yeah, with pleasure. Thanks for letting me. So we're hosting our annual post-budget event, as you say, on the 15th of May. And so generally we have these all around the country, and experts come in and analyse the budget, and we kind of provide a commentary on whether it's enough to improve child wellbeing in New Zealand. And but because of all of the lockdown stuff, we're going to go online this year, and we will have a discussion. It's going to be hosted by the documentary maker Brian Bruce, and the experts who are participating are really amazing. We've got Dr. Matari Howard, who is she's an academic, and she's also a doctor at Papakura Marae from CPAG. We've got Susan St. John, one of our co-founders back in the 1990s, and she's also an economics professor and speaks a lot about these issues. We have Andrea Black, who is from the Council of Trade Union. She's the policy director and economist there. And then we also have Kylie Quint, the legal scholar, and she has expertise in Māori and the criminal justice system, and Oranga Tamariki. So they're all really great. And it's free, and it'll be live-streamed on the New Zealand Public Television website at 11 a.m. on May the 15th. And so you can get all of the details on our website or on our Facebook page.
Fantastic. Oh, that's
I'd love to see people there.
Sounds like an awesome event. And I, as you said, some of those speakers, Andrea Black, Susan St. John, I have spoken to them. They're fantastic. So it'd be really awesome to hear from them, and also the CPAG just around this event. So I'll probably have to tune in for the live stream then. Georgie, did you just have any final thoughts or any further comments as we move into level three and for the future of the welfare system?
I just think it's so important, like the government has this child and youth wellbeing strategy. I just want to see more evidence that it's actually informing the values and principles, and it's such a great document. But how are they using it in their response? How are they centering children? How are they making sure that child poverty doesn't, you know, get completely out of hand in New Zealand? We just want all children to be able to flourish. We want them to have all of these opportunities. And we have this kind of opportunity to create a new world, and it can be fairer and it can be kinder. And hopefully the government pick that up and run with it. It would be such a pity if they didn't.
That was Louis Laws talking with Georgie Craw from the Child Poverty Action Group. They will be holding a post-budget brunch event online on the 15th of May, providing commentary from a team of experts, and it will be live streamed. And you can register for that event on their website. That is cpag.org.nz.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.